from HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 253, recorded live Thursday, February 10th, 2011. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Javier Lozano and John Galloway about MVC Conf.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes. I'm sick, and there you go. I've got pneumonia. But that doesn't mean that I can't podcast from my deathbed. And today, joining me on my deathbed, is Javier Lozano and John Galloway. How's it going, guys?
Great.
Good. Yeah.
So we had a very interesting event that I actually slept through, I'm afraid. Forgive me. I was not able to join you guys on Tuesday. John, what did we accomplish this week here on Tuesday?
Well, we had a second MVC conf. We had our first MVC conf last July, and it was a little bit like Code Camp style. We had, you know, a lot of presentations given over live meeting, and so for the second one, kind of concurrent with the MVC 3 release or closely following it, we wanted to kind of blow it out a bit. So we kept up with all the live meeting events, and we also had a full track running in the Channel 9 studios. So we had some live broadcast video, and we also had all these, so we had a total of 27 presentations going on. So it was a live virtual conference, and it was free.
Wow, that's cool. So this is the second year. How did this start? Whose idea was this?
This was actually Eric Hexter's idea. He kind of proposed it last summer. And Javier, do you have some more information on the genesis?
Yeah, actually, the way MVC Conf came about is Eric and I lead the community for MVC virtual user group, which is we meet every Wednesday at noon Central Time. And after doing it a couple of times, Eric was like, "Hey, we can go a little bit bigger on this. You know, what do you think about doing a virtual conference through live meeting?" And I told him that it sounded crazy and that I'm not sure how it would go. And then a month later, he pings me and says, "Hey, we really need to do this." So we started talking about it, and that's how the whole concept of getting all these pieces together came to be.
Wow. Okay. So this is second year. And you just went from being a small user group that just met occasionally online. I mean, how big is the virtual user group? And when you do meet, how many people show up?
When we do meet, we're about 30 to 40 members, right? And we cover different aspects of, you know, of MVC. You know, maybe like jQuery pieces or view engines and so forth. And it was more of the as like, hey, can this thing stand on its own? And actually, the first MVC conf was in July, and now we just did the second one, so it's actually been less than a year than we've done this.
Actually, yeah, wow. It's like 6 months and then another conference 6 months later.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, so we've been careful not to call this the 2011 MVC conf. We're expecting to do them kind of regularly.
Yep.
Wow, okay. Interesting. And this this virtual users group, you guys meet on live meeting as well?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. We were able to get a live meeting account through Ineta. You know, that's one of the supports that they have for .NET user groups. So we have one room specific for that meeting. And for this instance of MVC Conf, we decided to create an event through live meeting and use more rooms from that account.
Okay, and Ineta, of course, being the International .NET User Group Association.
That's correct.
And, so that's cool. So you're saying that you just asked and they made it available to you. And this means that the virtual user group effectively costs you nothing but your time.
Correct. Yep.
Okay. But that's going from 30 people, but I was hearing that you had as many as 2,000 people for MVC Conf. How do you scale, John, from 30 people occasionally to 2,000 people in an instance?
Right. Well, and, you know, we don't actually have the full usage numbers in, but it could be a lot more than that we're actually logged in on Tuesday. It's harder to know because it was the video streaming goes over CDN and all that, but from page hits, we could have had quite a bit more. But so each individual live meeting has a maximum of 1,250 people. So we tested out beforehand that we could spin up three or four of these. So that gives some scale in individual rooms. But we still have that cap for one meeting. And if we wanted to have, like, for instance, a keynote by Scott Guthrie, we needed to broaden that out quite a bit. So in order to do that, we decided to have one track that was all given over Silverlight Smooth Streaming and filmed in the Channel 9 studios.
And so, okay, so then, multiple tracks then. Three tracks you had running at the same time?
We actually had four tracks.
Wow. Okay, so four tracks, 1,250 people max per of the for the first three tracks, and then one track was done over Silverlight. And who helped you with that?
That was the Channel 9 studios. So Nick Fillingham was kind of our main contact there. We had great support all the way up. Dan Fernandez, Jeff Sandquist, and it was kind of down to the wire a little bit because they were doing a big studio remodel during this time. So they've expanded their studio out quite a bit. It all came together. You know, we were having pretty regular calls, making sure that we were up to that it was actually going to happen. You know, but so they did all the. They have a really professional setup going there. I mean, you see any of the things that are filmed in Channel 9, and they're high quality. And so we kind of came in and we said, "Here's our schedule. What do you guys think?" And then I worked with Nick, and he came up with a schedule that was down to the minute, cuts on the video. I need your slate here at this time that we're going to show while people wait. And they just, they do the whole 5, 4, 3, 2, and then they stop talking, and they point at you, and you talk, all that stuff. So it's a, full-on studio experience.
How did you make the jump, though, from a community-based free event that was kind of doing its own thing to getting kind of Microsoft involved? I mean, I know, John, you and I work for Microsoft, but did you just, make a call to Channel 9 and did you have to pitch it? I mean, clearly this costs somebody money. And, how did that get paid for? Or was it all volunteer, including Channel 9's efforts?
So I could talk a little bit more about that, Scott, since I was the money man for this
oh,
conference.
Oh, great. Fantastic.
And one of the things that we ended up doing is a while back, I had approached Scott Goo about doing this, getting him on board to do a keynote. At that point, we weren't quite sure how this keynote was going to solidify. But I figured, hey, it's good, to kind of tap his shoulder and get him interested. So we talked a little bit about it, and then Scott Goo brought up the idea of doing it on campus, because obviously, as we all know, he's a pretty busy guy, and actually everybody, on the ASP.NET team is pretty busy. So we started talking about those pieces. And from that perspective, is our original budget for MVC Conf 1 was very small because, again, it was no cost to us because it was all through live meeting, right? So Ineta was the one who I was upfronting that cost. For this instance, because we were going with live streaming, we had to raise money for that. And so we ended up creating three different tiers of sponsorship, a platinum, a gold, and a bronze. And we associated different benefits and perks for that. Mm-hmm. The platinum one was the one that, hey, you're going to help cover most of the cost, if not all the cost for live streaming. Because at that point, when we were talking with Channel 9, we weren't quite sure how much it was going to cost to, stream 7 hours of HD video across the internet. So we kind of tackled for that, and we actually had a sponsor, the Umbraco project, step up and be the platinum sponsor.
You're kidding. So an open source project stepped up to help a community group. That's amazing.
Correct. Yeah. They were amazing. And we also had other sponsors such as DevExpress, Telerik, Infragistics. TechSmith was a huge sponsor because they gave us Camtasia licenses so we can do local recordings. Wow. Nimble Pros, Code Project. It was just, on and on that we were able to get some money and funding to actually make this happen. And obviously Microsoft was the big sponsor there because they provided Channel 9 and Nick's time and, obviously John's time as well for us to get all this orchestration going.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
But from a money point of view, the Channel 9 folks just said, here are our costs, and they kind of just passed them over to us, and Javier paid them, you know, out of our donation budget. And we actually also had donations. We had an option during the registration process where you could buy a free ticket or you could choose to donate if you wanted to. And so we had some people choose to donate, which was cool. And then the, you know, with money left over after donations, we're going to donate some of that money to the jQuery project. So we just thought that was kind of a great, you know, this, it's kind of a whole open source feel from beginning to end with this. It's community run, it's free, it's volunteer speakers, and so we just thought that it would be great at the end of that if things all worked out and we had money left over to give some of that to jQuery.
So. Mm-hmm. Very cool. Yeah, I was in the one last year, and I was just kind of sad to miss this one. It was the perfect storm for me. That's pretty amazing, though, that it worked so nicely. Did anything go wrong? I mean, was there any, you know how like when you're organizing a wedding, one thing always goes wrong, they always say, but it's usually something that no one notices. Were there any big crises?
I think the biggest crisis was the, we had one of the tracks was Steve Sanderson presenting on MVC scaffolding. And it worked, but it wasn't ideal. We had a presentation that was relayed from UK over live meeting, and we picked up the video for it and presented it over the smooth streaming. And
oh my!
And of course, you know, I mean, it sounds crazy. So we actually did a full tech check with that. We had Steve sign on. We had live meeting running. We had the, you know, tested out audio, video. Everything worked beautifully. We were just shocked at how well it worked. And then, of course, during the actual conference, the screen resolution was off. So I was sitting on the live meeting relay machine, like scrolling to keep where he was typing or you know, keep everything in the view. And the refresh rate was low and everything. So, you know, there's only so much that we could do with that. For the follow-on video, we're going to have, you know, we're going to take the live meeting recording and record and reprocess that. So that'll be viewable. Okay. But the actual live thing, it worked, but it wasn't as, I think it was a little jarring going from the absolutely beautiful crystal clear video that was in the Channel 9 studios to a live meeting presentation. But the content was so good, I think, as a viewer, I thought it was amazing, so.
Well, yeah. I mean, if that's the worst thing that happened, then that sounds like that's nothing at all, really. And
yeah.
The thing that's interesting is that you can optimize for the offline viewer. And this is something that I do in my presentations, actually. When Drew Robbins and I were in Belgium and the Netherlands just a couple weeks ago, where I think I got sick, we sat there actually before a presentation for 100 people, and we said, all right, who do we optimize this for? Right? Do we optimize it for the 100 people who aren't standing in front of us, or do we optimize it for the couple of thousand who will download it? I think that's a really important thing. And the fact that you're going to remaster his video and optimize for the, you know, the greater amount of people who will eventually download it over a longer period of time is the right thing to do.
Yeah, and that was a great benefit with TechSmith joining in to help out, because by giving all the speakers Camtasia licenses, they were able to do local HD recordings, and they could go through and re-edit later, and they could also, if the recording for whatever reason, you know, if they weren't happy with their presentation or the recording didn't well, they could just re-record it, and we've had a few cases where that's happening. So exactly like you're saying, that gives the live viewership is great, but with just about any of these events, the on-demand viewership is a lot greater. So, with this, we had the Channel 9 videos. Since it was smooth streaming, that player stayed up for a while afterwards. So after the conference ended, instead of waiting for a long time for videos to be processed, people could immediately go back through and watch the keynote or watch any of the parts that they'd missed or wanted to see again. So I just think smooth streaming is just such an amazing viewing experience. But then after that, the Channel 9 team went to work, and they've already posted most of, or I think all of the smooth streaming films events. And then we're going through, we've got a volunteer team led by Eric Sowell down in Austin, and he's got volunteers going through and editing the live meeting presentations, and they're, you know, chopping off the beginning and the end and putting a slate in at the beginning, and then those will also go up along with these. Since they're all in HD, they should all look about the same quality when they're all up.
Hi, this is Scott coming to you from another place in time. Are you using agile practices to manage your software development? There's lots of tools in the market that manage the steps of a project, but most of them focus on individual roles. Get ready for a solution that caters for the success of the whole team. The guys at Telerik introduced TeamPulse. It's an agile project management tool that'll help you gather ideas, estimate, plan, track progress in a common workspace. Finally, companies, regardless of their size, can use a lightweight and convenient tool that makes all the stakeholders work as a united team, even if they're in different countries. By combining intuitive user interface and the power of Silverlight, TeamPulse removes the roadblocks that you typically face in applying Agile in an effective manner. No more lost data, no disparate systems, no lack of critical analytics regarding the health and velocity of your project. See for yourself. Get a free copy for 5 users and 1 project at Telerik.com/TeamPulse. And please do thank Telerik for supporting Hansel Minutes on their Facebook fan page, facebook.com/TELERIK, Telerik. We do appreciate it. There wouldn't be a Hansel Minutes if there wasn't Telerik helping us.
Javier, how many people are involved with this? I mean, you as you keep describing jobs, John, you keep saying, well, and then we've got volunteers for that, we've got volunteers for that. I mean, Javier, how many people are doing this?
We have a couple set of people doing this. The biggest thing was the live meeting crowd, or the team. I call them the team of ninjas. And that was like Raj Kaimal. Eric, you know, he looked like he was operating the Matrix because he had a headset and looking at multiple monitors and trying to get everything going. We had John V. Peterson and also Eric Sol, who is, like John mentioned, organizing the whole video editing. He was also helping out with light meeting, and John Teague. So you have 5 people right there trying to help with orchestrating all these different things from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Central. And obviously these people need breaks and so forth. And so if it would have been for them, you know, this couldn't have succeeded as well as it did.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Now, have you seen anything like this for Silverlight or for F Sharp or for other things? Or, I mean, I don't think I've seen a conference in the Microsoft space of this scale in a couple of years. Can you either of you guys think of a recent example? Because it seems like we should spin up versions of this for other technologies.
Yeah, actually, that's one of the things that that Eric and I have always talked about is that we wanted to create more than this for just MVC, right? So we're talking about something like WebConf, which is more related web technologies, maybe some jQuery, maybe some Web Matrix in there or other pieces of it. And we've seen other conferences like that, but nothing in the virtual world. You know, like mm-hmm. there's RubyConf, but that's not something you actually have to physically be there. Mm-hmm. But it's more of that, you know, how do you provide this large amount of content? And the closest one that I can think of is the Silverlight Firestarter, right, that John Papa just had recently at the Microsoft campus.
Mm.
But that's still more of it's a one-track thing, right?
Right.
I logged on, I took a look at it, and it was actually a great experience to see it that way. But this is more of an interactive one-on-one, right? Hopefully we can, you know, work out some of the kinks that we have and try to make it more streamlined and more processed, because we really don't have a secret sauce yet. We're working towards it. You know, we're just adding more elements to it and see what hits and what people like. And hopefully we can mass produce it even more to other things.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see like a .NET open source conf and have, you know, popular open source projects present how to use their libraries, right? You know, get like the Elma guy, get the nHibernate guys, get the AutoFact guys or whatever, and have them put together a bunch of content. And you could have, you know, you could have, like I say, 4 or 5 tracks and people from all over the place.
Yeah. Now what you've done is you made our work a lot harder, because Eric is going to listen to the podcast and says, he's going to tell me, we need to do open source conf. So I'm guessing that's probably, you know, that's a great idea. That's probably one of the next ones to do on the docket, because I think at that point everybody benefits from it.
Well, yeah, it'd be really interesting, and it's I like that it's a code camp. I mean, I've had more fun at code camp. I mean, I like Mix and I like Tech Ed, but honestly, I've had more fun at local code camps than really anywhere. It's just a community feel. But one of the things that I think we should talk about is that MVC Conf, while virtual, isn't just a bunch of smarties streaming video out to me, the viewer. there's also multiple feedback mechanisms. And I think that's what's significant, because a number of people really felt like MVC Conf was very, you know, very community focused and very two-way. Why was it two-way? What were the multiple ways that you could communicate back and forth to either the person who's speaking or the people who are quote-unquote sitting next to you?
Well, one of the biggest things we try to do is we try to leverage as many channels of communication as possible, specifically channels that a developer might be more apt to use. One of them, obviously, is being Twitter, right? So for the live streaming sessions, we had people tweet questions for, like, Scott Gu during his keynote, or Brad Wilson, and even Glenn Block. And one of the things that we did is, actually, John was the machine at this. We had a laptop plugged into a teleprompter inside the studio. So John will be scanning like crazy the Twitter feed, trying to find a question for, you know, and for the speaker at the time, and retype and try to make sense out of the tweet and then convert it into a question. And so then it was interesting, because as soon as John was typing it, you could hear somebody saying, "Oh, and we have a question from Twitter." It was like, it was sort of a weird echo, but cool at the same time, to provide that mechanism. And the other one
it was really wild to hear that real time. Just like, question comes in from Twitter. Seconds later, I would type it up, and it was actually just a big LCD screen hooked up to WordPad. And so I'm just typing it in a huge font, and then boom, it's up on the screen, and you could hear immediately the speaker just address the question. I thought it was beautiful how quick that flow was.
Sounds like organized chaos.
Yeah, literally it was. And then the next big thing was that it wasn't as big as this year, because I think people were more, there was more interaction on Twitter than before, is that we did have an IRC channel where, on Freenode, where people can go and have that conversation. I know that on the first NVC conf, Brad Wilson from the ASP.NET team was just crazy answering questions and sort of helped drive the conversation there. And we call it our hallway, right? You know, because I know that I haven't been to Mix, but people who have been to Mix have always said that the best conversations were on the hallway. You know, when whether you're talking to a fellow attendee or the speaker afterwards. And so we kind of wanted to drive that same interaction, and IRC provided a mechanism for that. And we also had individual IRC channels for each room. But like I said, since we had Twitter and people were, it was more apt to see the Twitter feeds and see that, I think that was a more cleaner mechanism of consuming the data than IRC.
So while you said that IRC was really popular last year, are you saying that you saw a drop off in IRC usage this year?
A slight drop off. It wasn't as high as it was before, because I don't think we had as much focus on it. I think our biggest focus in this one was the live streaming and making sure that went off without a hitch. Because the main reason that was is because, like John mentioned earlier, is that scalability issues we had with live meeting, right? With live streaming, we can scale end clients, as compared to live meetings, we were capped. And so it was more of like, let's get that right. We know we got IRC right from the first one, and we know it's working this one. So let's work on this next piece of the puzzle and ship that. So,
right. Like with the IRC last year, we had, say, for instance, we had this team behind the scenes that are starting and stopping the live meeting sessions. So they would introduce the speaker, they would start the server-side recording of the video, and then they would take questions and feed them to the speaker. But also, while they were doing that, they were involved in the IRC web chat. So they kind of kept it going. So that was one of the things that Javier and I did. And this year, we were so busy in the Channel 9 studios, we weren't as able to be involved in that. So I think, you know, that, and then just the combination of, I think the conversation really just moved over to Twitter this year as opposed to IRC as much. And, you know, I've been thinking about that. There's possibly ability to, like, that's a place to improve or scale up in the next one, is to have more of, you know, like, I've seen Sarah Chips has done this thing where she's had this LAN party and people just kind of log on and it's video chat. There could be, you know, open space, or there could be, like, kind of just a meetup thing going on during the conference there as well, because you've got all your friends, you've got all these people that are really passionate about this technology all in one place. And it does seem like there's an opportunity for more. We'd also talked about something like having a hackathon follow or precede the conference. And so, you know, as soon as the conference is over, or maybe as a final session, some people who are leading open source projects say, hey, we'd like to add on this big feature, or we'd like to do a bug bash or something like that. Mm-hmm. Let's all jump on, or, you know, that kind of thing. And so, I mean, there's definitely social improvement areas here. But, you know, again, the limitation of how much we can grow each one. So.
Yeah,
right, right. Yeah, another idea would be to have one or two local conferences in each time zone simultaneous to the scan, to the video, which I know that the Firestarter people did, where you'd have like 20 guys in Australia get together at the local office and be there physically. So you could have thousands of people who are viewing via live meeting and then thousands of people all over the world that are meeting at universities or offices and, and just to have 20 or 30 people in the same room to talk to. So they could have a little conference experience there as well.
Yeah. So it's funny you say that because actually that was one of the items we wanted to do, and we wanted to leverage, you know, DPE, developer and platform evangelism for that. And unfortunately, because of everything else that we had going on, that was, you know, it's just like shipping software, right? It falls down to the bottom of the priority list because we have other pending items. But I think for the next one, that's kind of one of the things we want to do. We've been getting pinged by Clark Sales from DPE that he wants to do that in the Chicago office. And I know that, you know, Eric was in the Austin office. So all the people who were there were already there viewing it. And we partially did that on the first one, but now is and getting more of an orchestration around that. So that way, if you as a speaker are close to a, you know, to the multipurpose room that the office may have at that location, then you can leverage, you know, the full bandwidth and every other resource in there and really do a presentation and at the same time broadcast it to whoever wants to see it.
Yeah, I think that, you know what I think you guys need to do? And this is just, you know, I say this again flat on my back without thinking. You need to write up a little 20-page PDF ebook about hosting your own virtual conference and make it like a cookbook. You know, here's the recipe. You know, this is promotion and this is streaming and here's the tech and here's getting sponsors and here's how you manage the finance. I think that there'd be a lot of value in that. I mean, you guys have that knowledge now because you've done it twice. But, you know, maybe there's someone out there who wants to do this for SharePoint or Git or whatever. And they may have even tried to kick it off, but it hasn't gotten to the size that they wanted to because there's some hard-won knowledge that you guys have in your heads that they don't have.
I think another big trick is keeping it free, too, because just about any of these things you want to do, the costs start adding up. So the balance of keeping your costs low and bringing in the sponsorship to cover it is tricky. I've seen other online conferences, but they usually end up costing, you know, a few hundred dollars, which is okay. It's definitely, you know, a lot less than you'd pay for an in-person conference, including all the travel and all that. But it's the that magical free price point where you can get, you know, thousands of people to get their boss to agree to let them sit there for a few hours and watch a show is kind of magical. So, I mean, it's, I think I said magical twice, but, you know, it's double magical. And so, you know, getting it to free is a real trick.
Yeah. And the funny part about all this, Scott, is that the logistics, I was thinking this on my way to Seattle, was that only two people really had to travel for this conference. And that was John and myself. Everybody else was home. You know, maybe someone had to go somewhere to get a faster internet connection, but it probably wasn't anything beyond, you know, a couple, a mile or less than a mile. But John and I were the only ones who actually had to get on a plane, you know, say, you know, bye to our families for a couple of days and stay in a hotel bed to make all this happen. So it was pretty cool if you stop and think about it, you know, from that perspective.
Yeah, that is pretty amazing. That is pretty amazing. Interesting. So where can people go and hear about this, about these sessions that they missed? John, where can I watch these videos now?
So we're working on getting all the other videos. So as we mentioned before, Eric Sol is working around the clock on his free time, along with all the volunteers, to get the encoding of these videos up and running. So we're going to be hosting everything on Channel 9. So right now we have the Scott Gould keynote, Phil Hacks, Brad Wilson's, and Glenn Block's presentation out on Channel 9 available, and we can put, you know, we can give you the link for that so you can put it on the show. Mm-hmm.
Will MVCconf.com be updated so it has all of these things
yes.
at some point in a big
yep.
long list?
Absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would be a good place for people that just want to learn about what's there and also to see the list of all the sessions and all that is at MVCconf.com.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And can I go there now and see last year's sessions as well?
Yeah. There's a link on the lower left-hand side that you can click on and go back to the previous content. So.
All right. Very cool. Well, this is great. Well, do me a favor and give me the list of the people that were involved and the sponsors again, Javier, so people
yeah.
know how many people worked on this thing.
We'll do.
No, like list it out right now. I want to hear.
Oh, sorry about it. It was Raj Kaimal, John V. Peterson, Eric Soule, John Teague, and our platinum sponsor was Umbraco Project. We had mm-hmm. Code Project. We had Infragistics. We had DevExpress. We also had, obviously, Microsoft
mm-hmm.
and TechSmith.
And Telerik?
And I think Telerik.
Oh, yeah, sorry, my fault. Telerik was also a great sponsor.
Yeah, well, I got to thank them or they'll shut me down.
Yeah, exactly.
No, one other sponsor that we had was Pluralsight, just in that they agreed to open up their MVC training. They'd done a promotion a few weeks ago where they had some MVC training by K. Scott Allen available for 24 hours. And so mm-hmm. I just pinged them and said, hey, do you want to do that again as a follow-on so people, after they finish blowing their minds with the day at MVC Conf, can learn more and go deeper with it. So they opened that up for another 48 hours. So that was
very cool. Well, thanks you guys, and thanks to Eric Hexter, who couldn't be with us today. And I'll put up links to all this and on the show notes. So thanks again, everybody, for putting on MVC Conf.
Well, thank you for having us on the show, Scott.
Yep, thanks.
All right, this has been another episode of Hansel Minutes. I'll see you again next week.